Welcome to the sixth episode of the Ikivi Podcast Season 2. In this episode, we have with us Akanksha Kamath, a seasoned writer and journalist with a decade-long experience in the fashion and lifestyle industry. Through her writing, she draws on human stories told via a 360-degree approach to content that includes print, digital, social, and video. Her words can be found in Vogue India, Vogue Business, One Granary, Architectural Digest, Vogue US, and Elle India, among others. In this episode, we speak with her about her long-standing career, her creative approach to work, her views on the impact of journalism in the fashion industry, and the future of fashion in India. This conversation was so much fun, light-hearted, and so honest, and we are very excited for you to tune in. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much, Akanksha, for joining us. I'm excited to have this conversation with you. My first question to you is about your journey. You've carved this really cool niche for yourself in terms of writing and in the fashion and lifestyle space. But I'd love to know how you got to where you are and what your journey has been over the past how many ever years.
Firstly, I really appreciate you having me on your podcast and, you know, the people who've been on it before. I'm a big fan of this sort of community that you've built. So thank you for having me. In terms of how I got where I got and how long it took, it's been a very winding journey. I started as a stylist at Elle. And I very deliberately and with intentionality, I took a break from styling and I said that I want to be a writer instead. And I pursued that with a master's course in London at Central St. Martin's and came back and joined Vogue. And then it's been a climb, an uphill climb. But fashion journalism and writing is just such a beautiful thing because, you know, with styling, it was very much like you were dependent on other creatives in terms of everything seamlessly falling together for one beautiful editorial shoot. But as a writer, it's you, your process, your little laptop, and sometimes, you know, my notes section in my phone on the back seat of a car. And, you know, I can just wax eloquent about anything and everything. And a platform like Vogue, of course, comes with the beauty of connecting with people and forming my own community within fashion. And as you said, a niche. And I really, really, truly enjoy it. And I'm privileged.
Nice. So what is it like what is a day like for you as fashion features director?
I am by super talented creative teams. And a regular day would be, I like to read the papers first thing in the morning because I think that informs. I love that. Like good
old few people, yeah, do like to read the paper.
Yeah, like just, you know, picking up a sheaf of paper and actually reading it, holding it with the black ink gets on your hands and all of that. I love the experience. I think it informs a lot of the stories that then we portray onto the platform that we have. And you know, after all, it is news. And it has to be born out of somewhere. And we are culture curators. We aren't culture editors. I don't think you can edit culture. You mm-hmm. can just subscribe to certain parts of culture. So reading news really helps. And then I walk into work. There is a lot of creatives. There's a lot of banter. And a lot of what we do is born out of speaking to each other, like literally shouting off of above each other's computers and being like, what do you think of that? What did you think of that? And a lot of events, and some people may drone on about how they don't like attending events as editors or, you know, people in this field, but I thrive on it. I try to be everywhere that I can be. I still haven't managed to be like Anaita, Anaita Shaw Padajanya, who is everywhere, and hats off to that woman. But I'm pleased with how much I can manage. You know, it's important. You go out there, you meet, you connect, and then you learn, and then you come back and put it into the magazine or online or social or video or whatever, you know, that modern publishing encompasses now. So that's pretty much a day in my life. And then a lot of coffees here and there to meet people and talk more. And then when I do have some time, which is on the weekends, I do my writing.
So is that when you spend most of your time, even for work, in terms of writing? The weekends? Because it seems like
the weekend
quite social.
yeah, it is social. Honestly, it is. So writing happens on the weekends. And then if I can manage to find myself a corner in the office and just put on my headphones and just go into the, you know, when you zone into the process, such a good feeling.
Yeah. Nice. But what would you say is the most favorite part of your work? And who does, how does it align with you as a person? And I'd love to know a little bit more about you as a person as well, what you like to do.
I approach everything with curiosity and enthusiasm. And I think to be a journalist, you need that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe with a pinch of skepticism. But that's just how I approach my job, my writing, my subjects that I'm interviewing and trying to draw on their stories.
Mm-hmm.
You have to come at it with like you're in the school of life, you know, like you want to talk to people and you want to know their journeys and you want to then do the best that you can at narrating it for them. And, you know, the impact that writing has, words matter a lot. And I think now more than ever,
mm-hmm.
images are arresting, they draw you in, but the words are where the story is. And I think it's so important to tell it in its truest, most nuanced form. And even more so now, because there's just too much happening. There's too many words. There's too much content. There's too many images. So just how to narrate it in the best possible way is what excites me.
Very interesting. What do you feel is, how are people receiving this form of content nowadays? I mean, I'm kind of just jumping right in. I had a bunch of other things planned, but I'd love to hear what you think of in terms of, you know, how people are responding to articles. How are they responding to this kind of content?
What I'm seeing, honestly, is that it's still very much celebrity content. You know, we recently just surpassed 3 million on the Vogue India social media Instagram. And, you know, we were stuck at 2.9 for a long time. And what finally spilled it over the edge was very much Bollywood and very much, you know, celebrity and Instagram content of like video and, you know, these newer ways of consuming content.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think is just reverberating is just culture. You know, you're tapping into all forms of culture in news bites or in reels or in on the website or in print. But it is very much like a, as I said, we're culture curators. You have to filter it and you have to provide it to people. And the kind of stories that actually resonate so much of, so the features editor at Vogue India, who is Sadaf Sheikh, she put forward this story about the Gidda dancers in Punjab, Zoravar, his name is. And he has a troupe of Gidda dancers. And that story, those images and the story just broke the internet for us as Vogue. So you're realizing that it's the regional content, the local flavored content that's actually performing well, which also ties into the whole Bollywood piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we are still such a country that wants to see our own people. We are all, we're proud, we're India proud. And that is what is resonating. And then to see that, how what impact it has as well, right? So now Zoravar and the Gidda Dancers troupe have been in Abu Jani Sandeep Khosla's new campaign, you know? And it's so great to have sparked that culture.
Do you see it? So when we were much younger, and I'm sure you had this experience as well, having an interest in fashion is kind of like waiting to see like British Vogue and the US Vogue and all of that. When I was much younger, I would, if anybody would travel, I would want to see what's going on. Obviously, because we didn't have social media at this scale at that point. But do you see that kind of fast tracking the whole culture transfer between countries and between regions now that we have social media? And do you think that that has lost value in a fashion magazine, or do you think that this, that's just kind of adding value to it?
I'm going to have to think about this one, I feel. I'm still like, I still look at all those magazines for referencing, for seeing treatments of how a story is told.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that now it doesn't feel like that world is very far away. So your culture is my culture, is their culture, is, you know, it's just, you know, we're all living, we're living a lot of, it's very globalized,
mm-hmm.
the way we're living now. So it doesn't feel too disconnected or dissonant from the way we are living right now. And so it is easy to relate and understand and be curious about what other people are thinking and doing and living the way they're living right now.
You also said something interesting about, you know, we want to see more of our culture now. I feel like a few years ago, maybe we weren't necessarily like that. We were still kind of wanting to mimic the West. And, you know, in a lot of ways, we still do. But I would love to know your thoughts on it. And how do you feel, from your point of view, what do you see that that is visibly changing that feeling of an Indian wanting to kind of preserve their own culture and, you know, proud of it? Because I've always felt that we're not proud enough of what we have.
Yeah. No, that's very true. We've always wanted to dress. We've always wanted to fit within a framework that already was existing outside of our world, right? But now we are being forced to look at ourselves. You know, I in fact, like everyone saying that this is India's time, I don't think we realized it ourselves. So now we're being forced to actually be like, okay, but who are we? What do we stand for? What are our values? What are, and India is not a monolith. It's not. Yeah. So even though there may be so much outside attention coming in, we are the bearers of how we will be portrayed and how we will be seen. So I think now more than ever, it's very important that we sure-footedly decide on how our culture is represented, or we will be the deciding factor.
Thank you for listening to the Ikivi podcast. If you enjoy listening to our podcast, do consider supporting us by visiting www.ikivi.com. That is ikkivi.com. We are a small sustainable business based in India, run by 5 women, handpicking the most beautiful, ethically made clothes and accessories from across the country, all in one place. Our podcast is self-funded and will always be free to listen to. You supporting our work would mean a lot to us. Thank you for being here, and let's get back to our episode.
How do you feel we need to be represented more? Like, I mean, I'm coming from a place of, you know, the recent last week of NMACC with like so many, many celebrities from all over the world coming for it, as well as the fashion show, the Dior fashion show. Like, what do you see, how India was portrayed in these two events, as well as how is it seen generally, and how do you think we should start kind of showcasing ourselves more and showing that image of who we truly are in terms of culture, in terms of traditions, in terms of our crafts and techniques and all of that?
I think Dior and Chanakya was just, it was such an amazing example of a perfect marriage. Because Maria Grazia Curie is a woman who placed her bets on India way before any of her contemporaries. And now she is benefiting from it. You know, it is strategic in many ways. But as she says, it was a very personal and emotional journey for her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I think it was beautiful the way that we were acknowledged. We were acknowledged in a global realm. And we were more than acknowledged. You know, it was... it didn't feel like Dior has come to India and has done a show.
Mm.
It was very much that we were part of the fabric, you know, from the clothes to the, you know, the crowd that was there, to the decor that was done, to the guest lists that were created, to the behind the scenes women who produced the show. It was very intrinsically, India was very intrinsically part of the Dior show. And I think that in itself is a blueprint for a lot of how international companies should work here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I went to something, I went to a talk between Imran of Business of Fashion with Maria Grazia, and he said something interesting. Was that, you know, it's a watershed moment, similar to when Fendi showed at the Great Wall of China in 2017, I believe.
Yeah,
and it kind of just, you know, it set off 10 years of China's time. So now it's India's time. And another very interesting thing that she said was that it's everyone's trying to connect with each other. As we said earlier, it's a globalized world, but what is finally bringing people together is you're still trying to find connections. What connects you to me? And she settled on the sari as a symbol. And she said that, you know, the sari also is a similar silhouette to the toga in ancient Roman empires. And she's Italian and the Grecian drapes, you know, there is some similarity. And I think people will find a way forward by finding these common grounds and these this connection.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's beautiful. And then what was the second part of your question?
The NMACC and the event and how that was kind of portrayed. And was that also a mark for us in the fashion industry in India?
So important, like so important what they've done and the scale at which they've done it and how they've imagined and perceived it. One thing that, you know, India has not been able to, you know, manage to do is the kind of archiving of how old a civilization we are, the way with the oldest culture in the world, but we don't have that kind of museum culture, that archiving culture. And so this was so important to show that, you know, this is how India has inspired the world. And then I'm sure there were so many international people in the audience who came and saw the exhibit. They will leave inspired and India will come into their collections again. So it's like, it's all very cyclical, and I think there's a beauty in that. I think it was a very important moment,
and I'm so glad you're saying all of this the way you're saying it, because, and also the Dior show being a blueprint for other brands and businesses in India, internationally, I feel like there's always so much skepticism around what people try and come in and do, because they just kind of throw them under the bus and say that this is for tokenism or, you know, something or the other. But I'm so glad you are saying what you're saying, because it's not like people don't think these things through. I mean, it's not, especially as a brand like Dior, there's obviously thought that's gone into it. It's not like, you know, they're doing it for a reason that is not really substantial, you know? And social media has kind of boosted this conversation so much. And it's exhausting, to say the least, to hear this about... I mean, there's always that side of it that's just like, oh, gosh, you know?
Yeah. No, and honestly, the naysayers, and thank God for them, because they're the voice of reason as well, when we all tend to be a bit more, like, I tend to be a bit more optimistic about things, but the naysayers are more cautiously optimistic, and I think that's important as well. But I think in the past, and this was not the first time that an international brand has done a show in India, right? We've had... Valentino in 2007, and then I think we had YSL in 1989. And but what was different is that, you know, there were more brown women this time in the show. There was we were part of the mainstream. We were not being exoticized, you know. This is when India's rich are supremely rich. They are the ones buying these collections, and Dior is very well aware of that, and so it is catered to an Indian person as much as it is to a global or a Middle Eastern or whatever. So I think that there was a definite shift, and it had to happen now. And it's just a snowflake effect from here.
Yeah. And you also said in our conversation prior to this recording, you said that India is on the map now a lot more for fashion, like everybody has their eyes on India. And I'm very, very excited about the prospects we have. But I'd love to hear what your thoughts are in terms of where you see it headed, because I'm a hardcore believer that we need our brands to be seen a lot more and our culture to be seen a lot more internationally. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, your predictions on where we're headed as a country in terms of fashion.
I mean, I don't know if I can predict. I'm no oracle, and I'm pretty much winging this as it goes along. But, you know, I think there is a version of India that has already exposed itself, and we see it at Couture Week. You know, there's Vaishali, yes, there's Rahul Mishra, there's Gaurav Gupta. Then we have Anita Dongri, who has a flagship store in New York. But what the world is seeing at the moment is very much that the craftsmanship and the couture part of India. Mm-hmm. I think there's so much that's happening on ground here, which is beyond that. And I think those designers, those brands also will have that kind of exchange. It's not that it hasn't happened in the past, but I feel like in a bigger way, maybe the flagship stores are now going to belong to... you know, the more niche brands that are not only doing the bridal couture. And so I would expect a lot more openings and a lot more, you know, transplants from India into international scapes. And I'm seeing a lot of the Indian diaspora are making their way back here and immersing themselves here more. So I think that cultural exchange is also going to open up a very interesting dialogue, you know?
Yeah, actually, there are a lot of people also kind of moving back to India, having lived there for a long time. Like, that exchange is also kind of taking place. People are...
I mean, we say that, Nivi, and at this point, I'm like ready to go to London.
That's true.
Yeah.
What next for you in London? Now that you...
Well, I mean, I'll continue contributing for Vogue. I'll definitely continue writing here, but I'm keeping it quite open. Once I get there, once I'm in the market, I feel like you need to really get your roots in to be able to make an educated decision going forward. So I'm going to see how that transpires.
Fun.
I'm open.
Yeah.
It's a different feeling for me as well.
Yeah. So to talk about sustainability in the fashion space, you obviously have kind of been in in it all in terms of what people are talking about and what brands are doing. What about sustainability do you think, like what changes have we made in the industry in the last few years, let's say? Because when we started Ikivi and when we started having more conversation about sustainability and, you know, the telling stories of the brands that we have and all of that, it was still really, really young. Now we see it a lot more. But in terms of impact, what are your thoughts on sustainability in the fashion industry?
I mean, my biggest where I noticed it the most was at the fashion week that just happened, the FDCI Lakme, whatever it is called now. Mm-hmm. And earlier it used to be Sustainability Day, used to be a day, and it used to be like the hump day of the week, you know, like you just kind of wanted to skip it, or you wanted to, you know, maybe just go for the 9 p.m. show because it's Abraham and Tagore or whatever. But this season, it was very much, it was the first day, it was the kickoff day, and it was the most exciting day for me. Mm-hmm. And I think that in itself was such a big switch to see that, you know, people like Anavila Mishra, who's been doing hand-woven linens and cottons, sustainability for and cultural sustainability in a certain way, right? She's been telling the sari story for so long. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to see her make a comeback. So I think for me the biggest point to note was how it's become the main day for Fashion Week in India. And in terms of impact, I think, you know, you're just seeing so many more tech platforms coming up who are making rewear and reselling of you know, vintage pieces, archival pieces possible. There's a lot of like resharing of clothing, and I think that's amazing. Like brands like Sartoria, who started that. And then I bumped into somebody and she has something called Relove. And she's, you've heard of it?
Yeah.
Interesting, right? Because she's bringing on brands, and it's just a barcode, and you can scan the barcode and you can shop an older piece or something. You know, it's just, it's all it's growing, and it's just nice to see how innovation is part of it all.
Yeah, there's so much going on, and it's exciting to see that people are getting more and more aware and at least asking more questions, which is really exciting.
And it's benefiting the shopper. Do you know what I mean? Like now sustainability is being sold as something that is like, hey man, it's good for you as well. You know, you don't want to wear that dress anymore. You know, share it with someone else after you've worn it a few times, thanks to Relove and a brand that signed up for it. So it's just making it a lot more easy.
Yeah, accessible. Yeah.
Accessible.
So what is sustainability like for you personally, and how do you incorporate that into your style?
I don't think I'm as sustainable as I would love to be. I think there's a long way to go to that. But the way I practice it is in my own field, right? With fashion. I don't remember the last time I bought anything from a high street brand, to be totally honest. I shop homegrown designers, local designers. I'm wearing Mali today. I'm wearing redone cut-off shorts, which are basically, you know, that brand that takes old Levi's and then they redo them. So, I mean, that's my way of doing sustainability, is just shop homegrown, shop local, because then you know that their raw materials have come from a certain radius around them, and it's giving jobs within this country, and it's being made in the most ethical way possible.
Have you worked on any stories for Vogue that are specifically in sustainability, and do you see, and if so, has any one particular piece, for example, really created waves or created more awareness on a large scale?
You know, surprisingly, and this is again, you know, our our love. And I think this is across borders. There's a love for celebrity. There's a love for red carpet. And at the end of the day, we are a news and fashion portal. So a lot of the red carpet stories that we do, and thank you to celebrities who are re-wearing their old clothes, whether it's Padma Lakshmi, whether it's Kate Middleton, whether it's Sonali Bendre, you know. And it's just so interesting to see that those are the stories. And in the headline, if you have, this is how Sonali Bendre re-wore her Abujani Sandeep Khosla jacket. And it just performs so well. And I may not have written this myself, but it's just so interesting to see how people appreciate that about celebrities. And it's so counter to what we believe the social media ways to be, where, you know, you think that, oh, because it's already out on the ether of the internet, it can't be seen again. But then people are reading this and they're enjoying it.
Yeah, for sure. Is there any, like, what has been the most challenging and complex story that you've worked on?
Every story is complex because I have a procrastination problem. But what has been, I would say, I wrote a cover story with the Indian women's cricket team player. Her name is Smriti Mandana.
I saw that.
And and maybe I do not understand cricket.
Oh my God.
I don't understand cricket speak. Like football, I can do. I have played football. I even captained the team for like one game. So I know football, but like cricket was difficult. And this was an in-person interview in her hotel room. She was in her blues and I was talking to her and there was cricket in the background on the TV. And I was just like, I'm going to approach this as I would any other subject of mine. So I went at it with, you know, you're a person, you have a story, you have a journey. I'm an investigative journalist. I will ask.
Oh my God.
I will ask the questions that will make this and it was great because what came out was a human story.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you have to do a lot of research before your articles?
Yeah. A lot. Yeah.
You should have watched like a bunch of matches or something before, just to kind of get into the feel of it all.
I just spoke to my dad instead.
Makes sense. Quicker.
No, I did. Oh my God. We should not be putting this on the internet.
An Indian who does not know cricket. How dare.
Can you believe it? I'm a national threat.
Yes, for sure. Nice. So, okay. So my last question to you, and I mean, there is still a lot that we can talk about in terms of, you know, where journalism is going. I'd love to know all of that, but maybe we'll do that at another time. But what would you like to share with aspiring journalists about, you know, responsible reporting and building a more sustainable and equitable fashion industry?
I think a large part of it would be to be able to tell stories of brands like yourself. You know, I think IKIVI is doing such a good job at sustainability and creating impact. And to make it more equitable, I think we need to go beyond just the panel conversations and, you know, these bite-sized pieces on sustainability. I think we need to empower people more to be able to do what I'm doing or what you're doing, you know, where, you know, even if you want to shop your wardrobe and make it mostly handcrafts, that would be incredible. Right. Mm. That would be so amazing. But how do you empower them? You empower them with by being able to provide them with that information. And I think that's where journalism and media are so important, because we are just making it all more accessible.
And do you think we have that scope, though, as journalists, in, because it's such an established, such a fixed, I mean, the publishing world is so kind of fixed in a lot of ways. Do you feel like there's room for young journalists to kind of break those boundaries and be honest and true and, you know, create those changes and make those, like, say those things that, you know, aren't necessarily spoken of enough?
Mm. If you mean like saying honest, true opinions, I think there are platforms for that for sure. Like, I think a Business of Fashion or a Voice of Fashion are definitely that. But from more mainstream magazine culture or publishing culture, I think it is changing, you know. Maybe like we are in modern publishing. The way publishing used to be is no longer, it doesn't exist. Like every day I learn a new way of storytelling, whether it's via video, I'm writing scripts now, whether it's like bite-sized caption on social or creating a reel, you know, like I'm an older millennial. That stuff is hard.
It is. Yeah.
So I think that there is definitely publishing is evolving entirely. And I think people want the human stories, and the back end of things is exciting now. You know, glossies have changed the way they look. Vogue mm-hmm. has changed the way it looks. And so I think there is, you know, there is room for everything.
Yeah, for
right
sure.
Now.
Mm. Exciting times. I'm excited to see what we have in store for us, both domestically as well as internationally, for the fashion industry. And I feel like it's an exciting time. And I'm excited that we're in the space at this time as well.
100%. I feel like we are already everywhere, but now we're going to be even more.
Exactly. On that note, thank you so much, Akanksha, for having this conversation with me. It was so much fun, and we'll stay in touch for sure.
Definitely. I had a great time. I had such a good time, and thank you for chatting.
If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to the Ikivi podcast, a space for discussion on living meaningful and fuller lives each day. The Ikivi podcast is a property edited and produced by the team at Ikivi.